Hello and welcome to Science World. Today we'll hear how a new medical robot can not only reduce the time it takes to manufacture dental crowns, but can also provide patients with better fitting dental work. Cutting edge technology was used to produce Disney's latest animated film, Big Hero 6. Elizabeth Lee will take us behind the scenes for a look at the high-tech tools and techniques that went into producing the movie. And for those of you who enjoy an occasional cocktail or a glass of wine or beer, we'll find out why we humans are able to consume alcoholic beverages without being poisoned. We'll have these stories and more on today's edition of VOA's Science, Health, and Technology magazine, Science World. Medical robots can help surgeons perform delicate operations more safely and with greater accuracy. One such machine reduces the time it takes to manufacture dental crowns. George Putich has more.
Computer-aided medical instruments are increasingly making life easier for doctors and their patients. It used to be that a common but complicated procedure to get a tooth crown required several visits to the dentist's office, while a dental technician was preparing the permanent replacement for a damaged tooth, the patient had to wear a temporary crown. Since mid-1980s, this procedure is gradually being taken over by robotic machines that reduce the job to just over 2 hours. Sitting in the dentist's chair takes even less time.
It's about 12 minutes worth of chair time for the patient. The rest of the time, it's work that's taking place outside the patient's mouth.
At his dental office in Northern Virginia, close to Washington, Michael Silvius and his assistant prepare a patient's tooth for a new crown. The actual drilling takes about 5 minutes. Instead of making the impression of the damaged tooth in a plastic material, Silvius uses a wand with a video camera to scan the tooth and the surrounding area. At this point, the computer takes over, designing the new crown and creating instructions for a robotic milling machine. A porcelain cube, no larger than the tooth, is inserted between two precise drills, similar to the dentist's drill, that grind away excess material, turning the cube into a perfectly matching tooth crown. To harden, the crown must be baked at high temperature for about 10 minutes. During that process, it also gets tinted to match the color of the neighboring teeth, so it is ready to be cemented in the patient's mouth. Patients are pleased with the result.
It feels amazing. The tooth feels like my tooth.
Dr. Silvius says even this technology may someday become obsolete.
The other thing you really look forward to is genetic engineering and eventually cloning so that you can make the crown out of actually enamel, just like the patient's natural teeth are.
But for now, he says, his patients are happy to be able to get a new crown in just one visit. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Disney's latest animated film, Big Hero 6, is a blend of science, technology, and art. Cutting-edge technology was used in making the movie, and one of its key characters, a robot, is based on real-world science. Elizabeth Lee reports from Disney Animation Studios in Burbank, California.
Trust me, I know about robotics.
The action-adventure movie about a boy genius, his robot, and his friends started out as an obscure comic book. Directors Don Hall and Chris Williams kept the title and the characters' names, but transformed Big Hero 6 into something uniquely Disney.
We don't have any superpowered people in this movie. It's all super technology.
You're always walking a line. We want to push it so it feels fun and fantastic. Yeah. At the same time, you want it to be based on an actual science because people feel that it just makes it feel more plausible.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your pain?
One real-world example in the film, says Don Hall, is Baymax, a huggable, inflatable robotic nurse made of vinyl.
Our robot had to be something unique. It couldn't be something that we've seen before.
They found their robot in Chris Atkinson's robotics lab at Carnegie Mellon University. In this interview provided by the university, Atkinson says,
most people think of robots either as tools for industry or military things. But when you say a robot is going to help you be your servant or take care of you, that's a stretch for most people.
In fact, scientists at Carnegie Mellon University have built inflatable robotic arms to assist older adults and people with disabilities, kind of like the movie robot, which works to heal the sick and injured.
I am Baymax, your personal healthcare companion.
Cutting-edge technology is featured in Big Hero 6, and groundbreaking computer technology also was used to create the movie. New software was used to build a city called San Francisco, where the movie is set. From the buildings to the characters and the geometry, this world is more complex than anything in the last three Disney films combined. With a more detailed world, the film needed a more complex lighting method. The studio created Hyperion, a computer program that simulates the technique of global illumination.
Global illumination is basically what you see around you in the world.
Hyperion harnesses the physics of how light works in the real world and applies that to this virtual world. Another piece of software created for this movie allows hundreds of thousands of people to be created in crowd scenes.
No two people are the same in this film. It's not like before computer graphics films where we had several different body types, several different head types, and you made 100 different people and they're repeated. There are no repeats in this film.
Whoa! Steady, big guy.
The directors say the new technologies developed for this movie remove technological limitations for filmmakers in Big Hero 6 and future animated features. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Burbank.
We just heard Elizabeth Lee's story about the cutting-edge technology that was used in making the new animated movie, Big Hero 6. For this week's Science World Quick Quiz, we want to know which of the following is considered to be the very first feature-length computer animated film. Was it A, Tron, B, A Bug's Life, or C, Toy Story? Think about it and good luck. We'll give you the correct answer in a few minutes from now.
Thanks for listening to VOA Science, Health, and Technology News Magazine, Science World.
Million years ago, the Earth suffered a cataclysm that killed off some three-quarters of the species on the planet. After this mass extinction, life began to flower again, and a burst of evolution gave rise to the more than 10,000 types of birds we know today. Roseanne Skirbel tells us that researchers worldwide have joined to create a new family tree of bird species.
Prior to this project, scientists had sequenced the genome for just three birds, the chicken, the turkey, and the zebra finch. The new tree includes the genome for 45 more, from hummingbirds to ostriches. Older studies randomly sampled single genes. The whole sequences give scientists like Duke University neurobiologist Eric Jarvis a set of new patterns to examine.
We want to find genes that are associated with particular complex traits like vocal learning or the ability to fly and so forth. And just looking at one gene at a time out of 10 or 20,000 genes is a lot of effort. So if you have the entire genome and you scan the entire genome for genes associated with vocal imitation, then you have a much better chance at finding your genes of interest than doing it one at a time.
Figuring out the evolution of birds isn't easy, says Tandy Warno, a professor of computer science at the University of Illinois. She says it wasn't just the size of the data set or the computer power researchers needed that made it such a daunting task. The analysis suggested that each gene or genomic region had its own evolutionary history.
When we analyzed these, you know, roughly 50 total genomes, and roughly 14,000 regions of the genomes, we discovered that every single genomic region had a different estimated tree. So this means that evolution is changing as you go across the genome. And to have this much variation meant we had to do something substantially more innovative.
Wuornos and her colleagues developed a technique called statistical binning that could construct more accurate evolutionary histories for the genes and therefore a better species tree.
So it was very, very good that we were able to improve the gene trees and then get a species tree based upon those. So the amount of data and the quality of the methods allows us to make a much higher confidence statement about each of these groupings.
Studies using the completed tree are reported in 28 articles released in the journal Science and other publications. One reveals surprising evolutionary relationships. Flamingos are more closely related to pigeons than they are to pelicans. Falcons are more closely related to parrots than to eagles. Another article discusses the finding that birds' ancestors had teeth, according to the fossil record. Jarvis says the new research confirms that by showing it's imprinted in their genome.
We found that there was a single loss of teeth in birds, because all bird genomes had loss of 5 genes involved in enamel and dentine formation in the teeth. All birds had this inactivation of these 5 genes that occurred over, 60, 70 million years ago.
Jarvis studies human speech at Duke University Medical Center. He knew from previous work that the pathway for sound in the brain of birds shared some similarity with humans.
But we didn't know if the behavior and anatomical similarity was associated with genetic similarity. And our most important finding is that we found convergent changes in genes regulated in speech areas of humans and the song areas of birds. And it's not just one gene, it's not 2 or 5, but over 50 genes.
So birds, rather than monkeys or gorillas that don't have those genes, are models for studying speech in humans. Among the other studies, the new data confirm an explosion of bird evolution following the dinosaur die-out. It shows that birds carry fewer viruses, and Jarvis expects the avian tree will yield answers to many more fundamental questions.
For understanding speciation, understanding how particular traits evolve, understanding convergence with language in humans, and understanding survival in response to climate change.
The Avian Genomics Consortium engaged some 200 researchers at 80 institutions in 20 countries. The database will be made public for future work. Roseanne Scherbel, VOA News, Washington.
In the northernmost parts of Sweden this time of year, it's dark, even during most of the day. To make up for the lack of sunshine, a local electric company is installing solar lamps in a high school. The hope is that the artificial sunlight will improve students' mood and productivity. Science World's Doug Bernard has this story by Jessica Berman.
From October through February, the town of Yuma, Sweden, just 500 kilometers from the Arctic Circle, gets between 42 and 45 minutes of sunlight each day. The rest of the time, it's pitch black outside. Studies show that many people develop a type of depression called seasonal affective disorder, or SAD for short, during the winter months due to those shortened hours of daylight. In Swedish communities blanketed by winter darkness, people, especially teenagers, become noticeably tired and lack energy, both symptoms of SAD. So executives at the municipally owned Yuma Energy decided to light things up for the 2,000 students in the local high school. Marketing director Anjanette Filian says the company installed full-spectrum lamps to see whether exposing students to 45 minutes of simulated sunlight per day in the classroom improved their mood. The lights have also been installed in the school's cafeteria.
We really get affected of this lack of fun. And also, if you look at science, it's a lot of new studies and are telling that this is not only a feeling, it really is true if you study the human body.
Filian adds that immigrants from Africa and the Middle East, who are used to more direct sunlight, are especially prone to depression when they settle in Sweden. The light therapy lamps have been up only since the beginning of December, and Filian is anxious to see whether students become more alert and motivated.
It would be interesting to see if these teenagers actually will be more, have more energy in like February.
Studies show regular exposure to artificial sunlight can take a little while to ease seasonal depression. 18-year-old high school senior Rasmus Oberg says it's taking a little while to get used to the brightness of the lamps, but Oberg supports the installation of the lamps.
As an initiative, I think it's great to really try and put money and effort into making sure that students get what they need to be able to finish the day. I think it's a bit of a matter as having lunch at school, you also need energy. You need sunlight to be able to function properly and educate yourself properly.
3 years ago, Yuma Energy installed similar lamps in 26 bus stations, and riders seemed to like the addition. The energy to power the 140 new lamps at the school was collected by the utility during the summer. Between June and August this year, there was a record 915 hours of sunlight in the town of Yuma. For Science World, I'm Doug Bernard.
Let's see if you have the correct answer to this week's Science World quick quiz. Which of the following is considered to be the very first feature-length computer-animated film? Was it A, Tron, B, A Bug's Life, or C, Toy Story? The answer is C, Toy Story.
To infinity and beyond!
The use of computer animation, or CGI, in filmmaking can be traced back to at least the 1960s, but it was the 1995 hit movie that featured the adventures of Woody, Buzz Lightyear, and a host of their walking and talking toy friends in what is considered to be the first feature-length computer-animated movie. Toy Story, which was produced by Pixar Animation Studios and released by Walt Disney Pictures, was such a hit that it spawned two sequels, both of which were also very popular at the box office. It was recently announced that a third Toy Story sequel, Toy Story 4, is being produced and is expected to hit the big screen in June 2017. Thanks for playing along with us on this week's Science World Quick Quiz. We'll have another brain teaser for you again next week.
You're listening to Science World on VOA. You can also find us on the internet. Our new webpage and blog can be found at voanews.com/science.
It's the holiday season in many parts of the world, including the United States, and people are celebrating. For many, enjoying alcoholic beverages at holiday parties is just part of the celebration. But if it weren't for some evolutionary genetic modification in our primate ancestors some 10 million years ago, we humans would be unable to consume alcohol without running the risk of dying or getting very, very sick at the least. Matthew Carrigan, a professor of biology at Santa Fe College in Florida, led a team of researchers at the Foundation for Applied Molecular Evolution to find out just what genetic changes made it possible for humans to consume alcohol and why these evolutionary adjustments were needed. Professor Carrigan joins us for today's one-on-one segment to talk about the research he and his team conducted and what they learned from their study. Professor, what led you and your colleagues to find that humans' ability to metabolize ethanol began much earlier than had been thought some 10 million years ago with our primate ancestors?
Well, most people know that consuming too much ethanol, and ethanol is the kind of alcohol that is in beer and wine, that consuming too much of it is really bad for your health, both in the short term and the long term. But if you look around, it's not too hard to find people doing this. In fact, it's a universal amongst most human cultures. And so we're really interested in understanding this paradox. Why is it people consume something that is bad for them?
Technically, alcohol is a poison. How did humans eventually, through evolution, how were they able to gain the ability to digest alcohol?
There's actually multiple different enzymes that work together to process ethanol and get rid of it and turn it into energy. What we did in this study is we looked at just one of those enzymes called alcohol dehydrogenase 4, or ADH4. It's in the mouth and stomach of most primates. And what we observed was that there was a mutation in our ancestors, a single change of an amino acid that converted this enzyme from one that was really good at processing the alcohols that you find in most plant leaves, and then converted it to one that was really good at processing ethanol, the kind of alcohol that is produced when fruit ferments.
So why did primates and, of course, later humans develop this ability to consume alcohol?
Well, it's certainly possible that this mutation had no advantage, but what we did to try to determine whether or not this was an adaptation is we looked at what else was going on in the environment at the same time that this mutation occurred. And there's two important and interesting things that happened. One, climate scientists tell us that the earth was cooling and drying out, and this caused the forest habitat that our ancestors lived in to shrink. And as one's habitat shrinks, the population living there is often put under pressure to adapt to a changing environment. And then paleontologists tell us that at about the same time, they see the first evidence in the fossil record of our ancestors adapting to life on the ground rather than living almost primarily up in the trees. And these two things kind of come together to make us think that this change in the enzyme that allowed us to metabolize the ethanol in fermenting fruit was adaptive, because where will you find fermented fruit and most abundantly? But on the ground. And this adaptation, this ability to process ethanol, would have been beneficial. Think about it. Most people today think drinking ethanol, the desired outcome is to get inebriated. But if you were in the wild, right, moving from branch to branch, high up in the trees, maybe surrounded by predators or defending your territory from other organisms, would you want to be intoxicated? No, it would not be advantageous. But this mutation would have allowed our ancestors to exploit new food on the ground without suffering the dangerous consequences of intoxication.
So besides primates to humans, are there any other animal species that have a similar ability to digest alcohol?
Well, there's a lot of anecdotes of people seeing what they think are animals consuming fermented fruit and getting inebriated. But to my knowledge, there's only one study that shows an animal called a tree shrew, which is not quite a primate, but is closely related to primates, that does consume fermented nectar in the wild. But other than that, there's an open field for study.
Evidently, primates and, of course, later humans still have had some difficulty consuming alcohol, from things like you mentioned, inebriation, to overconsumption, to diseases like alcoholism and other physical effects that alcohol has on the body. What kind of insights do you think your research and the findings that you found will provide other scientists who are examining some of these conditions and diseases caused by alcohol consumption?
Well, there's a growing appreciation in the medical community that many of the modern problems that humans face health-wise are actually deeply rooted in our evolutionary history. Things like back pain or the overconsumption of sugars, salts, and fats are really related to our evolution. And what our study does is, for the first time, it demonstrates that this model also applies to ethanol. And if we want to understand why it is that humans tend to consume ethanol, we have to look at our evolutionary history.
Looking at the harmful effects that alcohol has on humans today, did the evolutionary process that allowed the primates and then later humans to digest alcohol slow down a bit or stop at a certain point, since there are some side effects to drinking?
Right. That's a really important question and brings up a really important point. What our study shows is that our ancestors adapted 10 million years ago to the kinds of ethanol that you will find in wild fermenting fruit, which tends to be relatively scarce and low concentration of ethanol. Now, our environment as humans has changed dramatically again in the past 1,000 to 10,000 years as we've learned how to ferment fruits and grains to much higher concentrations. So because our environment has changed so much and we're exposed to much more abundant ethanol concentrations, a higher concentration of ethanol, this is where we start to see the problems, because our environment has changed once again. So it's not that our evolution has slowed down, it's that our evolution hasn't been able to keep up with the rapid environmental changes.
That was Matthew Kerrigan, a professor of biology at Santa Fe College, located in Gainesville, Florida. That's it for this edition of Science World. Thanks so much for listening. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to visit our new website and blog. The address is voanews.com/science. Along with program information, you'll find stories, links, and much more. So stop by and visit us on the internet. Science World has been produced by Bob Doty, and I am Rick Pantaleo. Be sure to join us either online or on your radio next Saturday and Sunday as we check out the latest in science, health, and technology on Science World.